Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, September 24th, 2018. A prominent women activist urges South Sudanese women to take politics seriously.
Please look into this agreement. It has 35% women representation. It is you, women, this time to sit down and bring your representative. Those one whom you think they will be representing you from the top to the bottom.
And some media owners in South Sudan are closing down their businesses.
We are always threatened with closure down of the paper. So we try to censor ourselves. And then again, we are also censored at the printing center. And when customers, readers, when they see a blank page like this, they will not understand why it is a blank page.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The women representative who took part at the peace talks in Khartoum is calling on South Sudanese women across the country to take advantage of the 35% ratio in the agreement allocated to women. Eunice Amer Manyok is encouraging women to get involved in decision-making at government institutions. Manyang David Mayer has more for VOA from Juba.
Eunice Amer Manyok followed the talks from the start of the high-level revitalization forum in December 2017 until the parties signed the revitalized agreement held this month. Amer says women must strive to learn what the agreement holds for them.
I urge all the women in the country, please look into this agreement. It has 35% women representation. It is you, women, this time to sit down and bring your representative. Those one whom you think they will be representing you from the top to the bottom.
According to Article 1 of the Revitalized Peace Agreement, the parties shall appoint a total of 10 women ministers to the national government. The Transitional Government of National Unity shall appoint 6 female ministers. The SPLM-IO appoints 3, while other opposition parties get to appoint 1 woman. The agreement also mandates that women be allowed to appoint 3 deputy ministers' position. There are 5 female ministers out of 30 in the Kiir administration cabinet. That amounts to 17% women representation, below the 25% the ruling SPLM party mandated for the current cabinet. Amir says women must be represented at the cabinet level because it is where important decisions are made.
When the decisions are made and your voice is not there, then your right is not there. Your right is stolen. Let them choose their other women who will go and fulfill the 35% in the commissions where the decision will be made so that they can look into the suffering of their other women.
Women make up about 60% of the total population of South Sudan, according to the latest population census form available, which is from 2008. 90% of women are illiterate in South Sudan. South Sudanese women leaders say they are keeping a close eye on the implementation of the latest peace agreement, particularly the articles on women representation in government. Susan Wasuk Felix, chairperson of the Jubek Women's Union, is one of them.
We are monitoring and we have the documents like the peace agreement which is signed. I also share with my other colleagues. But again, there are so many organizations who are now holding workshops to brief. And there are those also who are looking for ways of how to translate this peace agreement into the local languages so that it's easier. Then they will see a means of how to do it, either to do civic education, focus group discussion, radio talk show, rallies, for us at least for people to understand this agreement.
Under the agreement, the parties are expected to form a new government 8 months after the signing of the peace deal, and SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar is to resume his position of first vice president. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayer in Juba.
Still on matters to do with peace, President Salva Kiir met with opposition groups in the Sudanese capital on Saturday, where he urged opposition parties, including the SPLM-IO, to nominate representatives to the pre-transitional committees as stipulated by the peace agreement. Manasi Zindo is SPLM-IO's chairman for the National Committee for Culture, Youth Empowerment. Manasi says Juba should stick to the deadlines in the agreement.
Well, we welcome the good gesture. We would prefer that we follow the matrix of the implementation of the peace agreement. It has taken us 5 years fighting a war which we were not supposed to fight, and now we have only 8 months to implement key provisions during the pre-transitional period. So we would ask the president that he follows the implementation of the peace agreement roadmap. In consultation with the mediators, there is a timeline for everything to be done. So we in the SPLM-IO, we will be nominating our people to all the committees when time comes.
What do you mean when time comes? Because the president is calling for all the opposition groups, including the SPLM-IO, to nominate delegates for this pre-transitional body. Isn't it part of the process all along?
It is part of the process. And actually, we were the initiators of this provision. The government during the talks didn't like this provision because they wanted the current government to be responsible for the implementation of the agreement. We said no. Since the government will be running, it is better to form this committee, which will be tasked with the implementation of the agreement, so that they work according to the timeline. So what we are saying is that in the matrix, there is a time when we are supposed to nominate the peoples. We in the SPLM-IO, the National Liberation Council, ratified the agreement. That is the first step. Now, the parliament in Juba, which is under the president, needed to ratify the agreement. Then we move to the next level. We move like that, step by step.
President Kiir has extended an invitation to your leader, Dr. Riek Machar, to send a delegation to take part in the nationwide campaign for peace promotion. Will you be part of such an effort?
We cautiously received the invitation. Now, what the president meant by the invitation is he wanted Dr. Riek Machar and the other opposition leaders to come to Juba as a sign of building confidence. Now, there are a number of things that the president can do to show that he is really for the idea of confidence building. One, he needed to lift the state of emergency which has been in place since 2013. Two, he needed to release prisoners of war. Our colleagues who are languishing in his prison, the prisoners of war who are on our side, we had released them early this year. Three, President Salva Kiir and Dr. Riek Machar and the other opposition leaders need to come up with a unified message to the people of South Sudan to assure them that they are committed to the implementation of the agreement. Such kind of a message is what the people want so that they can now come out of the bushes where they have been hiding. Those who are in the refugee camps can begin now to think of returning home. I think this is what needed to be done instead of inviting two or three people to come to Juba for 3 days.
Well, but Manasseh, the president has also called on IGAD leaders and invited Riek Machar to participate in a yet-to-be-organized peace celebration in the country. Will you be part of such a celebration?
We have not discussed that. But my view, and probably the view of some of my colleagues, is that the country do not have money to organize such a big celebration. That money can be used now to take food to people in the displaced camps. When we begin the implementation of the agreement, and it is progressing very well, then at some stage we could say, okay, since we've done A, B, C, D, which are the key provisions, then we can do celebration. For example, at the end of the 8 months of the pre-transitional period is when we can organize such a ceremony, because very key provisions which will assure us that the peace agreement will survive is supposed to be implemented within the pre-transitional period.
That was Manasseh Zindo, SPLM-IO's chairperson of the National Committee for Culture, Youth Empowerment and Sports. He was speaking with my colleague Peter Claudie from Nairobi. Many South Sudanese papers were launched right after South Sudan declared its independence in 2011. Many of these papers shut down due to several challenges, including high cost of publishing and interferences from security operatives. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino takes a look at the problems facing publishers in South Sudan.
Emmanuel Monchol, editor-in-chief of the Dawn newspaper in Juba, says when the economic crisis started, his team decided to cut in half the number of copies printed per day from 2,000 to 1,000. Monchol says the paper now relies more on subscribers than street vendors to sell copies of the Dawn. He says unlike in the past when the newspaper's management sent copies to Yei, Nimule, Rumbek, Bor, and even in Kampala, Uganda, the paper now focuses on the Juba market only, and they have learned to cut costs in other areas.
When the economic crisis came in, we decided to reduce our newspaper from 16 pages to 12 pages. Because the Indian company, the Universal Printers, that is charging us, everything was going up, and they told us that if we want to survive, we can reduce to 12 pages. Number two, we decided to minimize on the number of colored pages. So of the 12 pages that we have, we only have the back page and the front page that are colored.
Monchol says on several occasions, national security operatives have censored the paper.
Our paper is heavily censored, and we are always threatened with closure down of the paper. So we try to censor ourselves, and then again we are also censored at the printing center. And when customers, readers, when they see a blank page like this, they will not understand why it is blank page. They will say, maybe I'm crazy. Why did I forget to fill this page? Not knowing that it was removed by the national security at the printing center.
Anna Mariano, editor-in-chief of the Juba Monitor, says newspapers barely survive these days because sales are low.
It depends. For example, the situation will be that it's raining in the morning. The distribution will be very poor. And like that one, you can expect the returns minimum. And sometimes when there's holidays, like government offices and NGOs, they are not that because some of them even are our subscribers.
Namriano says management would like to distribute copies of the Juba Monitor across South Sudan. But the poor road network and irregular flight schedules make wider circulation impossible.
Some states that fly going every day, and some states like Torit, we are just sending by road. It's only that the other states where the situation of insecurity is still, that is where we are unable to reach.
Kwang Pal, Secretary General of the Association for Media Development in South Sudan, couldn't confirm the number of registered newspapers in circulation across the country, but confirms a number of them have shut down.
Between 3 to 5 newspapers. Some were shut down before 2013 incident, some by the authority, and some also due to inconsistency or maybe the owners run out of money or financial challenge. And some attributed to personal insecurity. They were not safe, claiming that they are being targeted.
Despite the economic and political challenges in South Sudan, a new newspaper called the Star Tribune launched in Juba earlier this month. The paper's editor-in-chief, Victor Kerry, says the desire to inform, educate and entertain the public motivated his team to launch the new publication.
We know that newspapers in South Sudan, particularly here in the town of Juba, from the beginning were in a good state of affairs. You know exactly the situation of the country, and you have to work within the difficulties because we cannot wait, and we do not have timetable on when the situation will be better.
The Star Tribune plans to publish papers Monday through Friday. The newspapers that once existed in Juba but have since shut down include the Citizen Newspaper, the Juba Post, the Nation Mirror, South Sudan Today, the New Nation, the Advocate, the Pioneer, the Independent, the Juba Sun, the Southern Eye, the Southern Times, the Juba Telegraph, the Daily Mentor, and the Daily Vision. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a fight breaks out at a wrestling match in Bor. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what advice would you give to a new mother?
She has to take care of her child.
by giving her breast milk regularly, also by looking after her child properly. If she is sick, she must take the child quickly to the hospital.
A new mother, take care of your child, concentrate on their health, and create a bond with them.
The best advice I'll give to a new mother is to try as much as possible to bond with her newborn baby.
A newly mother, I would advise her to really love her family. She has got her firstborn, praying for the family. Yeah.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Three people were hospitalized after a traditional wrestling match turned into violence on Saturday. Police say they are looking for more than 30 suspects involved in a fist fight during the match. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Colonel Philip Ayunawur, the inspector for Bor Town Police, says the initial argument began between a young woman and a young man. He says minutes later, the young woman's brothers began beating up the young man, prompting other people to join the fight. Speaking in Arabic, Awur says the police are looking for 32 youth.
We are looking for 32 people, 16 from the site of Angakwe and the other 16 from the site of Koch. After we have apprehended them, we are going to carry out investigations and we will take them to court. It is unacceptable in this community for a gentleman to engage a lady in fighting because this can lead to intercommunal fighting and fighting can cause death.
Yak Jurkuch, a doctor in charge of the surgical ward at Bor State Hospital, says three men involved in the brawl were hospitalized.
One of them was just beaten on the body with the sticks, so he's better. The other one who had a head injury, he was hit on the scalp and had a scalp laceration. He had been taken care of, he had been sutured on the head. But then the third guy, who is a bit critical, was hit in the neck and in the abdomen. But we are managing him and he will pull through.
Akenya Jinruk chairs the Bor Community Youth Association, which organized the wrestling match.
We need to avoid that, have the youth not to do such kind of problems. Okay. Wrestling, so we don't want to ban it completely, because one of the things that people do, and they need to practice. So it was started by our ancestors, so it wasn't from now. So the main thing that Dinka people, Dinka Bor, like most, but with that, doesn't want to be banned completely.
It's not the first time violence among fans has erupted during annual wrestling competitions. A year ago, Jonglei State authorities imposed a ban on all traditional dances and wrestling matches statewide after a young man was killed during a wrestling match in Twitch Central County. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
From Bor, we move to New York, where U.S. President Donald Trump advocated for the global call to action against the world drug problem during the opening session of the United Nations General Assembly in New York today. Trump noted a 60% increase in drug-related deaths across the globe in the past 15 years and thanked other nations for joining the fight.
The call is simple. Reduce drug demand, cut off the supply of illicit drugs, expand treatment, and strengthen international cooperation. If we take these steps together, we can save the lives of countless people in all corners of the world.
This is Trump's second appearance at the General Assembly. In the past year, he has cut funding to the United Nations, withdrawn from the Paris Climate Accord and the Iran nuclear deal, and quit UN bodies. Tomorrow, Trump addresses the General Assembly. Other speakers Tuesday include the leaders of Egypt, Nigeria, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. First Vice President Taban Dengai is leading South Sudan's delegation and is expected to address the General Assembly Friday morning. This year's General Assembly comes just weeks after the government and opposition parties signed the revitalized peace deal. This will be Deng's second appearance at the General Assembly. During last year's general debate, Deng told the Assembly that, quote, realization of peace is impeded with the insufficient resources, end quote. He also reiterated his government's commitment to implement the peace agreement. Ugandan musician turned legislator Bobby Wine says the government may be planning to hijack his People Power Movement slogan by registering it as a political party. Robert Chagulanyi says it does not matter because the concept is more important than the name. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Bobby Wine, the opposition politician who has become a rallying point for disenfranchised youth, says the slogan People Power Movement is designed to show that power belongs to the people, as enshrined in the Constitution. He says the government's purported plan is trying to undercut the movement.
We are aware of that, and I want to inform them that we are not bothered, because we know this is not about us, this is about all Ugandans. And Ugandans cannot be stopped.
Wine has accused the government of forging evidence to depict people subscribing to his movement as brutal, violent and chaotic.
The state has so many times tried to put people to come in our midst and throw stones or objects so that the security forces can get justification to reply back to us with bullets. Many times they've been trying to push us in different corners. They want to identify us as a political organization, and yet we are people that just believe in an idea that we believe every Ugandan should believe in, that power is in their hands.
In August, Wine, four other politicians and some of their supporters were arrested and charged with treason for allegedly throwing stones at President Museveni's motorcade during campaigning in the Arua district. They claim they were tortured in detention. The government has denied the allegation. Last week, Wine came back from the U.S., where he got medical treatment for several injuries. Police deployed heavily to prevent crowds from forming to welcome him. Security officials drove him home, despite his objections. The legislator says he won't be intimidated into giving up his campaign for change.
They might arrest a few of us. They might detain, imprison, or even eliminate some. But ultimately, they cannot kill us all. So it is up to you, Mr. President, to remain with a stiff neck or to yield to the humble call, and indeed the desperate call of all Ugandans, to let them free. People power, our power. Our power, people power.
Museveni, who is 74, has been in power more than 30 years. A large segment of the population supports him and credit him with bringing stability to the country. However, more than 75% of Uganda's population is under the age of 35, and those young voters increasingly are embracing the People Power Movement, which has been used to campaign and win a number of elections. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Meanwhile, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Roman Catholic Church has been on the forefront of pro-democracy movement for decades. Responding to pressure from the church, President Joseph Kabila announced last month that he will not be seeking third term. The church is now urging the government to ensure that December's elections are free and fair. But some church members face grave risks for their activism. Church activists talk to VOA about what they are demanding from the government and how far they are willing to go in the face of those threats. Chika Odwa reports from the DRC capital, Kinshasa.
Heads are bowed. Some shed tears. It's a special service to commemorate pro-democracy activists who have been killed and those who are still detained. The Catholic Church is a powerful force in the DRC. Nearly half of the country's population are members. They say they're inspired by the church's steady demands for good governance. But ever since the church began organizing anti-government protests in December 2017, security forces have been targeting some churchgoers, like Gertrude Ekombe.
À partir du 31 décembre, on n'est plus rentré dans nos familles.
Gertrude says, since December 31st, we did not go back home to our families. We have been living in hiding since January. For our security, we inform the UN mission, MONUSCO, about our movements, and some of their agents go with us whenever we go out. They are even here with us now, she says. Church-led street demonstrations occurred on three separate days with participants chanting for President Joseph Kabila to step down. His mandate had expired in 2016. Clergymen would often lead the campaigners. Many would march while carrying crucifixes and pictures of Jesus Christ. Government forces killed more than a dozen people at these demonstrations, the church says. An assistant university professor, Rossi Mukendi, is among them. His sister, Mariel Kanku Tamanga, says the family was always worried about his anti-government activism. Mariel says he was killed like a dog in the middle of a crowd. Personally, I used to tell him that we are in Africa with its tyrants here. It's all very dangerous, but he refused. President Kabila finally announced last month that he would not continue for an unconstitutional third term. He appointed former Interior Minister Emmanuel Shadary to run in the December 23rd election. With voting day getting closer, tensions are rising. Six presidential hopefuls have been banned from running. Church members are strategizing their advocacy for free and fair elections. The Catholic Lay Committee, known as the CLC, is helping to coordinate. The spokesman, Jonas Shiombele, says it's a sacrifice for the public good. He says the CLC is fighting to safeguard freedom of expression, especially in this pre-electoral context. The indications show there is no guarantee of a credible, transparent election. But Lambert Mende, the Federal Minister of Communication, says the Catholic Church leadership is overstepping its boundaries.
So let them remove their status of bishops and become politicians. And we run together and we shall see who will win elections. We are talking of, you know, leading a country. It is not the bishops to lead a country.
Parishioners say as long as the church continues to lead them, they'll continue to non-violently demand greater democracy in the DRC. Chika Odua in Kinshasa for VOA News.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Nabni Baledna, which means Let's Build Our Country by Emmanuel Kembe.
Analikuwa kwa na geni fidaluma
Sheme ya fapu telebeza Rijamu
Analikuwa kwa na geni fidaluma
Sheme ya fapu telebeza Rijamu
Umalginende
Umalginende kalimanu Watataluma
Kuliyombilende
Kuliyombilende kalimanu
Beza Ritiamu
Sheme Fofi Terebeza
Anakalisi mchokolo kasilani Uwala nura shantugene Dalu nabunibele tugene
Tugene Dalu nabunibele tugene
Tugene Dalu nabunibele tugene
been listening to Emmanuel Kembe with the song Nabni Baledna. I am John Tanza in Washington. We hope you enjoyed this show. Let's know what you think about us. You can send us an email at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also get in touch with us on our Facebook page. Our title on Facebook is South Sudan in Focus. Tune in tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.